Yes, it's the 150th edition of the Sound of Football podcast with Terry DeFellin, Jan Bilton, Graham Sibley, and your returning host, Chris Oakley.
Ladies and gentlemen, what can I say? It's an absolute pleasure to be with you once again. Chris Oakley here for episode 150 of The Sound of Football. What a pleasure it is to be back with you once again, and what a pleasure for me personally to be able to speak to the three people who keep this podcast ticking over in my absence, frankly. It's Terry DeFellin, Graham Sibley and Jan Bilton. How are you doing, chaps?
Very well, thank you. How are you?
I'm good. All the better for being here on this special occasion, eh? Who'd have thought we'd have made it this far? We keep saying that on all these milestones, don't we? Not that we're kind of lacking in confidence.
Yeah. It just becomes even more surprising every time, though, doesn't it, really?
Well, yeah, quite so, yes. But I like to think, you know, we had the staying power built in right from day one.
And well, we understood the sacrifices when we undertook this mission.
we knew it wasn't going to be over by Christmas.
It's true.
We're in
it's
for
true.
The long haul. Yes, indeed. The fact is, we could sit here and talk about the good old days and you know all the various 149 episodes that we've done thus far, but we're not going to do that. We didn't think you'd want that. We thought we'd discuss something far more interesting, far more meatier, you might say, against modern football. In three words, that's what we're going to be discussing. It's a movement which has been all over the web and all over Twitter and all those kind of places for a while now. I'm sure most of you will have seen that particular phrase bandied about, but we thought we'd discuss what against modern football is, what we think those people behind that campaign are trying to achieve, and the fact that actually we're very much in favour of modern football and we're going to try and justify our opinions. So let's start off with an open question then. Basically, when you see the phrase against modern football, chaps, what's your first emotion that springs to mind? Is it one of rage?
I need to be enlightened as to how much of modern football these people hate. Is it the style of play, or is it to go down to everything, as in, you know, the bovel's not as solid as it used to be?
No, it's not about the football itself. It's about the conditions for football fans, I think, is primarily, I think that's at the heart of it. It may be about, to an extent, about the way it's done on the pitch, but I'd be surprised if that was the case. It's more about your fans' experience at football, how it's changed, and how, in the opinion of people who sort of ally themselves to the sort of notion of against modern football, see that that's a bad thing. I mean, I guess you look at things like ticket prices, all-seater stadia, security, and just the general disconnect between clubs and their supporters.
That's it, pretty much in a nutshell.
Yes.
Yeah. See, in that case, I very much like modern football.
I was going to say, can
I go now?
Yes. Yeah, I'm Bilton, everyone. There we are. Now, when I see the phrase against modern football, I just sort of suddenly feel that my hackles are going up. I'm thinking, like, why this need to, it seems like that somebody's expressing hate towards modern football and that they don't like any aspect of it. I think you're absolutely right, Terry. I think the campaign ostensibly is squarely about reinstating, say, safe standing areas in stadia, lowering ticket prices and that kind of thing, and as you say, the experience that one has at football. But in so doing, I think that a lot of the phrases that are bandied about, if you go to the website and the Facebook page of this campaign, you will see things like, you know, we're trying to reclaim our game, which is very emotive kind of language, and it does kind of bring about the question of, like, was it ever our game in the first place? Because there's been this kind of business element throughout, you know, the history of football. It's just never been quite so
certainly, yeah,
you know, forthright as it is
now. It's probably worth pointing out a distinction here. There is a magazine, and I think this is what you're referring to, Chris, is the magazine Stand Against Modern Football, mm-hmm. which is a fanzine, and yes, associated Twitter and Facebook and all of that, which is, has, I think, crystallised a general view that can be summed up by the slogan against modern football, which you see in grounds all over Europe. It doesn't necessarily represent everybody who is, quote, against modern football, and I should stress it doesn't claim to either.
Yeah, there is also the fact that against modern football has turned into a Twitter meme.
Yeah,
as well.
So I think it's rather than necessarily sort of like looking at, say, Stand Against Modern Football, the magazine, which takes a position, and which they're perfectly entitled to do, and has a lot of readers, which is great for them. And the as you described, says the meme, or if you like, the sort of state of mind that is against modern football.
Yeah, I think it's something like you've got people who are perhaps disenchanted with the game. I think that's probably what it is. Some people who are perhaps a little bit sort of weary of football, that it doesn't give them the buzz that it gave them in the past. And we all know what that feels like, don't we? Mm-hmm. When, you know, we've just had a bit too much football.
Yeah. Maybe sometimes it works. Sometimes if you watch enough games and you suffer enough heartache, then you inure yourself to that. But I guess that's not what this is about, though, is it? This is about the conditions of football and the relationship. The fact that fans should, in their view, be more involved in the running of the game, certainly in terms of their own clubs, and less than they are. They tend to, I mean, they would look at, you know, institutions like Supporters Direct.
Yeah.
And find a lot of good in what they do. And then obviously AFC Wimbledon and now Portsmouth, who are wholly support their own clubs, and they would regard those as being a good thing, which
I think as well though, that if you've got a movement or a publication and you position in it from the fans' perspective, you know, it's a very easy sell. How many times do we see websites or new magazines that are by the fans for the fans?
when in fact they're
actually by corporations.
Yeah. I mean, Stand AMF is not a corporation.
No.
It is a bloke called Seb.
Yeah.
And he runs that along with, you know, a few other people. But yeah.
This sounds a lot like the kind of anti-capitalist movement. Would it be fair to draw?
Probably is. It's probably what you know, the people who aren't generally political, and you know, but actually want to feel something, and so they're rallying against is you know,
modernity.
They'd like to see us all standing up again, being heard around by policemen,
and trained too long to get in,
tolerating racism, and not being able to drink beer in the ground.
Yeah, well, we can't do all of those things now. And obviously, if you're talking about not tolerating racism, I mean, that's an interesting. I mean, I've thought about it and listened to quite a lot of and read quite a lot of, sort of material on, from the sort of like people who ally themselves with this, and there is an element of it in my book that is perhaps glamorising stuff that we would probably not like. I wouldn't want to see again. But that would be to suggest that the whole movement and lacks nuance. And that, you know, I think the easiest thing to do if you're looking to criticise something is to look at sort of like, you know, your what you dislike about something and then go looking for it in what they do. I mean, they are, you know, I mean, I would suggest to you that things like safe standing and supporter ownership are progressive and forward looking. And they are in favour of those things. And I think that is an interesting aspect to it, because although they couch themselves as being, you know, we are perhaps backward looking, but that doesn't necessarily mean that they are regressive.
No, I mean, I think if you are the sort of person who does take an interest in football history or nostalgia, then you're only too well aware of the things weren't so good in the so-called good old days.
Well, yeah, I mean, you're studying the history of and the origins and the history of football in London, aren't you? Chris, Chris, your Footballatic website is a nostalgia website, and you guys both are steeped in the game of yore. I mean, do you think the game is better now, or Or do you think that it's just basically pretty much the same as it's always been?
I think as far as...
Or something else, you think something else?
I think as far as it being a business, an industry, I don't think it's changed since the end of the 19th century, really. The whole origins of professional football are based in the exploitation of footballers by rich club owners.
And the exploitation of fans, of people, punters.
Fans have never had a say in the running of clubs. And, you know, it's always been, well, it's my money I'm putting into this club. I own it. I can do whatever I like with it.
Very much the English model. Very much generally the model. And I won't bang on about Germany again this podcast, I promise. But obviously there are alternative ways of running football clubs.
Yeah.
But in the UK, certainly.
Yeah.
Traditionally, the UK model is a consortium of businessmen who have a connection to the community and or the club.
Yeah.
And possibly, back in the day, using a club as a means of disposing of income that they'd rather not declare to anybody else.
These things just simply haven't changed over years. And you've got, nowadays, you've got more revenue streams coming in. It used to be that clubs would only get money from who came in through the turnstiles. Now that's not the case. Clubs will get less than half of their money from match days. Some clubs, it's even less. It's less than a quarter of their money comes in through the turnstiles. So the importance of fans, I suppose, is becoming less and less when compared to...
Turnstile money still accounts for a huge...
Clubs
are always trying to expand their stadium.
Yeah, it does.
It's so bloody expensive.
Over in the continent, that's not the case. I mean, in Italy, a lot of the clubs there... will get less than a quarter of their revenue will come from match day.
Right.
So it shows you where the interest of the club owners lies.
It gives you also, yes, of course. And it also gives you some insight as to just how rich the Premier League, because not only does it have the best TV and sponsorship contracts, but it also probably charges the highest money.
Yeah.
And also, which accounts for huge amounts of its revenue by comparison, from what you've said.
Yeah.
Well, that's why a lot of these chaps invest so much time and money in the game, is because there are not many industries where you get your hands on cash to that extent every other week. So that's straight in their pockets. They're not waiting for turnaround of invoices and things like that. It comes straight into their pockets.
It's a little bit more different now, I would imagine, obviously, because the way that money transfers is somewhat different. But I mean, back in the day, I mean, there are plenty of stories about attendances being read out, and not quite ringing true with what you're looking around you, and suggestions that this was a very good way of making, as you say, making, because people would turn up on the door and they'd hand over their cash. Very few credit card payments back in the day. Very few debit cards didn't exist. No one was going to be paying by cheque at a turnstile, were they?
No.
They turned up with their cash.
Let's not also forget that back in the day you had the minimum wage just to really kind of maximise your revenue, income and all that kind of stuff. So
The maximum wage. Well, I mean, that's right. I mean, that's Jimmy Hill's finest legacy, isn't it? Is getting rid of that and giving the workers a fair shake. But absolutely. I mean, you must have been coining it in when it was like maximum wage was £60 a week.
Even when the maximum wage was in force, it wasn't as if like your whole squad would be like ramped up to it.
It was
there would usually only be one or two players that were on that level.
And
often getting other jobs on the side as well, cursory jobs on the side to supplement it. But yeah, it was.
So in many respects, the way things are at the moment, although they appear from outward appearances, they would appear somewhat bonkers. And I think that there is a slightly fair shake for everyone. I don't personally think that the relationship between the supporters and the club has changed one bit, personally. I think it is much what it's always been. I think in England, certainly, which is my experience, that the relationship is one of, not provider and client, more, you know, punter.
Do you think it's because
football fans are punters rather than necessarily, you know, seen as being supporters of the club, even though they're
they are.
Well,
yeah,
this is difficult to say because I mean, the reason why a football supporter is called a supporter is because if they were a fan or if they were a consumer, they would simply not go to football because they would say for most people's experience of football is that it's shit. Most football is rubbish. It's only good football teams that are actually good. Mm. You know, most people don't support Borussia Dortmund or Bayern Munich or Arsenal or Manchester United.
Yeah.
You know, they support Sunderland or Crystal Palace or West Ham. You know, and for the most part, football is rubbish. And if you were to look at it strictly as a point of view as a consumer, you'd leave. You'd go to the pictures.
Yeah.
You'd do anything.
The complete waste of money.
Put up with that rubbish. But you don't because you have a connection, strong connection that you feel to the club. And it's that connection that gets exploited.
Well, of course,
by club owners because you don't care because you're going to come anyway.
Yeah, I mean, if you didn't like football, what there would there be in your life that would make you stand up and cheer?
Well, yeah, no, obviously, I mean, you're not human if you don't like football, in my opinion. But I mean, you're living for those rare moments. I mean, yesterday was brilliant.
Oh,
Championship
was utterly
brilliant.
Amazing.
But it's not like that every week.
No.
If it was like that every week, it probably would be. It would either be absolutely brilliant or just get like blasé and say, well, this is stupid. It's, you know, this is crazy. You can't just do this, you know. But it's only like that really once or twice a season.
Mm. I think it's the same if you take it right down to the kind of micro level that in a game of football, it's the rarity of goals that makes it so special.
Such a novelty.
You know, exactly. So having a day like yesterday is what it's all about. Really,
yeah. It takes 9.5 months for you to get there. That's the trouble. But you do it, and you do it happily, I wouldn't have it any other way. But
no, that's agreed. Yeah,
it does. But when you look at it from a point of view of the clubs, they must sometimes look at football fans and think these people are idiots.
Yes, they just keep turning up week in, week out.
It's mostly boring.
Yeah,
you know, hardly anything, and yet they still.
But of course, most of the enjoyment yesterday came from the most modern presentation of football.
Well, television, you see.
Yeah. Yeah. Mm-hmm. So you had two of the matches on live. One was on your standard Sky Sports channel. The other was on your red button. And they kept cutting away to show you the goals from other grounds.
Mm-hmm.
You know, great. Wouldn't it be lovely if we had every week, as we discussed?
Yeah, absolutely.
But the whole thing that you could be, to use the media term, across all the action, really did to like help with the drama of it all, didn't it? Really, mm-hmm. You were just sitting there, and you know, your brain was melting trying to keep up with all the permutations, who was going down, and then all of a sudden you hear that the Huddersfield goalkeeper is just like tapping the ball between his feet, just counting down the clock to get a very precarious draw, wasn't it?
Absolutely.
So those sort of things that were bonkers, and the only thing, these things that are only available now because of the times that we live in.
But the thing is, we've mentioned Sky obviously on a number of occasions, and yes, we've talked about them in negative terms. But the fact of the matter is that coming back to something I mentioned earlier on, is that I don't think any of us are really that blinkered as to sort of think, well, Sky is shit, therefore football is shit, because Sky does, for what it's worth, give us these opportunities to, you know, maximise the excitement that there is in football when it comes along. So, you know, one can't just simply sort of say, well, modern football's shit, because if that was the case, we'd all be cancelling our Sky subscriptions.
Yeah, I wonder if there is a subconscious feeling that fans feel that the relationship that they had with clubs has been replaced by the media's relationship with clubs.
Hmm.
And whether or not, you know, the clubs see the media as more important than the fans.
Well, yeah, I mean, and also clubs now will look at the season ticket holder who turns up at their stadium and the supporter from Mumbai. who watches on a dodgy stream every Saturday, and they would regard them as having equal status.
Yes.
And I don't know whether or not that is a good thing or a bad thing, to be honest with you. But that, but it's very much how the bigger clubs now look at them. They want people who have who are highly unlikely to ever set foot in their home stadium to be treated with the same amount of respect, or with the same amount of to be exploited, probably for the same amount of money as a season ticket holder, so as a hardcore season ticket.
It's a fairly arrogant position for someone to take. Just to think that they are, that this should be that important to somebody who's providing them a service. I know you've said already you don't think it's like a consumer provider, but you know, to think yourself that self important, not you, Terry.
I record a podcast.
Yeah, it's why he's sitting on the throne and we're sitting on stools.
I thought you were on your knees on the floor, actually.
Just to hammer the point home, that is a, you know, I can't get my head around the arrogance that position holds.
I don't know if it's a conscious belief or whether or not it's a subconscious belief, but I think it's certainly, I think it's something that drives people forward, is the fact that they feel like they should be getting a bit more respect.
That's kind of stop thinking.
That's actually annoyed me. That I'm genuinely annoyed by the people think that this should be important.
Well, let me offer some insight into that. Hopefully, football, I think, is seen as more than a business by football fans. It's seen as an amenity, and an activity. And something that reflects your community, perhaps to a degree, a sense of your own identity.
Clubs, not company.
And the fact that they are called clubs, indeed, rather than company, suggests an element of association that doesn't exist between a Sainsbury's and an Ectocard holder, for instance.
But
as a consequence, there should be a greater relationship between, you know, the supporters of the club and the people who run the club, because the notion is that the club is eternal, it will carry on, and that there's a certain higher priority to ensure that the club sustains itself. Now, your club's been in, and your club's had some financial difficulties, and my club has, and in those moments, the role that the supporters take is very important. If nothing else, then reassuring and solidifying the fact that to any potential investors and administrators and creditors that this is an important institution, and to kill it like any other business would be a tragedy. And that's where I think that sense that the supporters should have a greater stake, or be allowed a greater stake in football, I think is probably justified. In my view, so I don't think it's quite down to arrogance. Although I take your point.
I just think that as well, for anybody to think, any football fan to think that their club isn't a business. I mean, you talk about the actual term club, but most of these clubs are owned by a PLC or a limited company.
Arsenal's been a limited company since the 19th century.
Yeah.
I'm not saying that I agree. I'm just putting across what I think is, generally speaking, the view.
I've heard that a lot about bring back, you know, this is meant to be a football club, you know, not a company. And it's almost all like people saying, I'm a member of this club.
But I just wonder, I mean, boiling it down to maybe its kind of purest form, I'm trying to get my head around whether there's any kind of hypocrisy here, because not amongst you all, I should point out. No, I just want to
probably
kind of make any waves here. But I mean, your average football fan, when they go along to a football match, they're sitting there, and they're actually, their contact is almost entirely with the team that they're watching. That is their central focus. All the everything around it, all the stadium and the people that are running the club, it's almost like that's kind of secondary to everything else. And yet, clubs, when things aren't going so well, fans basically will say, it's the club's fault. And so therefore, I demand to have more of a say in the running of the club. And it's almost like, well, okay, if you're that bothered, maybe you should like, I don't know, somehow put yourself forward more and sort of say, oh, I want to be involved or get involved in a fan supporters group. And a lot of fans don't. They just, obviously, they go along, they focus on the team. When things go wrong, they then start sort of shaking their fist and sort of saying, well, everything's wrong, but they don't actually do anything about it. And then you've got this club mentality that you just mentioned, you know, being a member of a club. But I wonder to what extent ordinary fans actually feel like they are a member of a club. They're just, all they want is to go along and see their team winning. Am I making any sense?
Well, I don't think there's a hypocrisy there, because it would be a hypocrisy if fans were an amorphous mass with a single collective consciousness, but they're not. Hmm. They're a collection of individuals who, generally speaking, can think for themselves. Hmm. So some will go along and they will just see it as, I want my team to win and that's all I'm interested in. And others will go along and say, I'm more interested in the longevity and the continued existence and welfare of the club, and that I can go along, you know, every Saturday, and I can afford to go along, and I can go in degree of comfort and enjoy my day. And these things are more important. And I would perhaps, to be generalising, I would suggest that you're against modern football sympathisers. Sympathisers is a terrible word. I apologise for that. That's not
collaborators. What I
meant. Collaborators. Yes, that's better. Are probably more of the latter than they are of the former.
Do you think the embodiment of against modern football are clubs like FC United of Manchester?
Well, FC United of Manchester is a reaction, I would say, to modern football. Mm. Yeah,
yeah.
Because I mean, I think that one of the aspects of modern football that is not reassuring by any means is leveraged takeovers of football clubs.
Yeah.
So that's acquiring a football club and with debt, and then saddling that football club with that debt. And I mean, I personally think that's a rotten way to go about doing business generally. And I think it's certainly a crappy way to deal with a club like Manchester United. People who would disagree with that will obviously point to the fact that, you know, they've just won the league and they continue to be successful.
Yeah, make a huge amount of money.
And continue to, yeah, indeed. But the idea of using a football club just simply to pay off somebody's debt is a bit grisly.
Yes.
And FC United Manchester was obviously formed as off the back of that from the group.
But there are a lot of things within its ethos that are the sort of things that people who are against modern football
when we went a couple of seasons ago, when we went to the Supporters Direct conference, we had to listen to one of the guys from there, and grief, they're terribly pleased with themselves.
They are incredibly
pleased with themselves. Yeah. They've created for themselves a utopia. You know, I'm actually genuinely happy for them.
Yeah.
I mean, what quite happens was they start to go through the leagues, and whether or not they'll end up having to chip away
the fact that they don't have any sponsorship on their shirts, they kick off at 3 o'clock, which they've already
done away with.
Can't work when you go into the FA Cup and people want to show you on television.
Well, people want to show you on television, and it's like, well, do you want the TV money or don't you? Yeah. And then they have to make a decision as to whether or not they want the TV money, or even worse, they have to say, well, actually, no, you're members of the FA and you're in the FA Cup, so you have to do it because we signed a piece of paper, and saying that, you know, if the club gets televised, chances are you have to probably move your fixture. So
That's what I was going to say. Sorry, go on, Jan.
Yeah, a flippant point I was going to make is that it sounds a lot like one of those, you know, socialist camps out in Cuba or something like that, where a lot of well-educated...
That is not the case. I mean, I looked at the United, the FC United fans when we went to that game and we saw them, and this is a predominantly working class movement. And these guys, they were turning up there, and they were, in my opinion, they were solid working class stock, good folk.
Not our sort of people. Not us.
We've got with our Sky Sports subscription and our shonky feeds to German second division. No, these are proper football fans.
It's like David Frost sketch. Still... I look down on him because I've got a Sky Sports subscription. etc. etc.
Yeah, I just think that it, things like that is. For them to be that smug about it, it just smacks of looking back and been against progress. And it does, I think, you can draw similarities with, but that's with you know, these people that take themselves out of the normal world and have these silly little
But I think what they've done is the right thing, though, because what they've done is they've actually done something about it. They've set their own club up.
Exactly.
But
what they're going to find is if they get success, they'll have to compromise on all these things.
Like, that's exactly
already there is talk about you know, if they want to progress, they're going to have to take shirt sponsorship. Hmm. And it's causing a schism already in the
So there'll probably be an FC United of FC United.
So going into what you were saying about socialist groups, you're going to have like the People's Front of Judea, aren't you?
Split at us.
No, it is going to be.
Without wishing to sort of say, like, you know, the whole thing is futile. I mean, you know, yes, they have set up their own club, and yes, they are trying to do something about it. But you just kind of wonder, these people that are sort of saying, you know, we want to go back to how things used to be. Well, it's kind of impossible now, because we are the momentum is going in a particular direction, and whichever way you want to tackle this, there is sort of continuing movement in that direction, and that, you know, FC United of Manchester and everybody else are going to have to sort of fall in line with this, whether they like it or not, because that's kind of, you know, things aren't going to regress back to how they were 20 years ago, and I think there's a lot of good reason why it shouldn't.
Oh, right, so are you actually saying there, Chris, that I'm not going to get my youth back?
Well, you don't look a day over 48, I have to say. I mean, speaking as someone who, as you mentioned earlier on, Terry, you know, involved in a football nostalgia site, I mean, one might think that I'm completely subscribed to the whole thing of, you know, stand against modern football. But I just feel that there were good points and bad points about the way football used to be, just as there's good points and bad points about modern football as well. And if you want to get, you know, cheaper ticket prices and reinstate sort of safe standing areas, then you've got a hell of a job on your hands, and I think they're just kind of taking maybe a couple of key issues and other people maybe jumping on the bandwagon because they feel as though there's a bigger campaign going on here to kind of bring back the 70s or the 80s, and I don't think that's going to happen. Anyway, there you go.
Certainly hope that doesn't happen. I wouldn't want that to happen. I think that things like against modern football are important in the debate, because they do perhaps establish a position and a point of view, and then for other people to then look at that, and then they can then gauge how they feel about it according to what these guys feel about it. And maybe even record a podcast about it.
They could invite us on and we could debate
they
them.
Could.
Question time styling.
Mm. That's right. Yeah, they could.
Well, I mean, I wonder if these people...
What do you mean, these people?
I've maintained my level of annoyance throughout this entire
clearly.
Podcast.
Clearly.
Rage like impotent rages.
They're all probably driving around in their Morris Marinas, aren't they, and not immunising their children. How far back it wasn't it great when, you know, when the cars were crap and your kids didn't make it to 10, but you still could stand at a football match, and that's all that matters, idiots.
I think it's possibly a little bit more nuanced than that.
No, I'm going with a mad northerner.
that 6-0 really did touch a nerve, didn't it? Sorry about that. Sorry.
Yeah, actually, I've been angry since last Monday. Yeah.
I feel we could probably fill another half an hour of this podcast talking about similar things, but we ought to probably wrap it up there while the debate is still fresh and while Jan has still got some friends. So that being the case, I just want to say thanks very much indeed, Terry, Graham, and indeed Jan, for inviting me back. It's been absolutely wonderful as ever, being in your online company for this podcast. And also, of course, it goes without saying, as we've always said in the past, thank you to everybody who's been listening in over the previous 149 episodes. If you've joined us occasionally or regularly, thank you very much indeed for taking the time to listen to our humble little podcast of ours. We appreciate your support, and may we continue to have it in the future. Lads, anything else before we go?
I don't think so. Did we have anything else to say?
I don't think so. I think we've boiled enough blood, haven't we? Really?
Yeah, I certainly hope so. Yeah. We don't do enough of that on this podcast.
I'm spent. I'm going to go and have a cigarette now.
This is where the In Favour of Modern Football campaign begins. So check your Twitter feed for details. That, I reckon, is probably about it then for now. Thanks very much indeed for listening. Join Terry, Graham and Jan again next week, hopefully, for another Sound of Football podcast. Until then, from the four of us, it's goodbye.
Goodbye, bye.
Goodbye.
Contact the show at facebook.com/soundoffootball, at twitter.com/soundoffootball, or on our website, sofpodcast.com.